Hey, it's me, Steve, the guy from that podcast you're listening to. How you doing? I'm doing okay. You doing all right? Good. Don't walk away from me. Come on, just hang on for a sec. Just a little while. Come on. Don't be a dick. I just wanted to ask, are you going to A&DCon 2022 in Charlotte, in North Carolina, August 19th to 21st? Yeah, you should go. I'm going to be there. I'm not asking you out. That's gone weird now, hasn't it? I'm just saying that the last couple of A&D conventions have been a really good time. We've done gaming, we've hung out, there's been live podcasts, there's been cosplay, there's been drinking. You don't have to drink though, you can just watch me do it. It was lovely to see you all last time in Nashville, and I really want to see you guys again in North Carolina, home of John Hartness, I guess, and the A&DCon this year. So do visit us at www.authorsanddragons.com and find out about tickets and hotels, and I'll see you there, hopefully. Bye.
This is not a test. Don't expect to be impressed. Put on your life vest. Sit down your armrest. It's time to stray from the grind. Don't take my hand, cause you'll find no peace of mind.
You're doing an Irish accent, right, Drew?
No. It's like, I know if I try at this point, it'll come out as some weird garbled ing Scott, and then I know I'm going to slip into Spanish, and it's just going to get real bad.
Yeah, my Irish and my Scottish and pretty much just sound like a bastardization regardless.
Yeah, my Irish and my, I can do Irish for like about like 1 second and then it becomes Scottish.
Top of the morning to you, you bloody cunts.
And then eventually you just panic and it all goes to transatlantic. Hey there, fellas, how's it going?
Top of the morning, me love you long time.
And there's our intro.
There it is. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Side Quest, the episodes we do when we're not doing the episodes for which this podcast is based. I am Drew Hayes. Joining me tonight are Joseph Brassi, Rick Wilteri, Robert Bevan, and Steve Weatherall. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, friends.
So tonight we have a main topic that is one that has been just dominating the publishing world for a few weeks, and now that things are really cooling off, we feel it's time to jump on into this topic, as is our way. But before we even get to that, we have a bonus action where we're going to talk about something hot, something contemporary. Again, at least for us, by the time you listen to this, it'll be like a week past. But hey, we're talking about St. Patrick's Day.
Woo!
Woo. Frosted Lucky Charms!
And there we go.
There it is. All right.
Everybody else
shut it down.
Got anything else they want to deal out that deck?
Already wading into offending the Irish.
So, you know, we just thought it would be fun. It's St. Patrick's Day while we're recording. We record on Thursdays. And we thought it would be fun to tell some St. Patrick's Day stories. We're obviously not getting too wild tonight, but in years past, perhaps we have entered into some entertaining situations. Does anyone have a St. Patrick's memory they want to kick off with?
I have a. It's not so much me drinking or anything. It's being. I was at a fight practice for a stage combat troupe a couple of years back. God, this is probably almost 10 years ago. And we were one of the fellas who was a younger guy was talking about. About whether or not he was going to drink because it was St. Patrick's Day and they were wrapping up their practice and stuff. And he's like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to drink tonight. I don't know if I'm feeling it. And the head instructor guy walks, who's like probably a guy in his 60s, walks over and grabs him by the shoulder and says, no, you have to drink tonight. Why? You have to drink tonight because one day you will be old and you will not be able to drink. And do you know what you will do then? No, you'll cry like I'm about to.
Oh. I mean, he was wrong. I've met a lot of old alcoholics.
Yeah, obviously.
Well, they're maybe 30. Yeah. They looked old.
For whatever reason, this guy couldn't drink, and that made him very sad.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of old alcoholics are actually still doing the drinking.
Oh, that is a sad story. It's the St. Patrick's Day equivalent of, it's dangerous to go alone. Take this.
Take this alcoholism.
Just a can of Guinness and half a pack of Marlboro Lights.
I can't remember if I've told this story or not on the podcast, but it's going to be a repeat if not, because my God, it's a good one. One of the wildest St. Patrick's Days I ever experienced was in Dallas, which is wild for me because Dallas is not what I think of as a party city or even really a wild city. But my God, did shit get insane on Greenville and Lover's Lane for the St. Patrick's Day parade the Saturday after St. Patrick's Day.
Sounds about you're about to launch into a country song, Drew.
It's so ridiculous. The setting is like we're across the street from a Tom Thumb and a Freebirds Burritos. That's actually foreshadowing.
Oh, dear.
And it's just it's a parade going down what is basically a kind of a not quite suburb, but like a street with a, you know, bunch of shops and supermarkets and things. So me and my buddy, we take the train up because I'm living downtown at the time. We were planning on, you know, doing a little bit of drinking, but, you know, we go up expecting it to be standard parade rules. You know, you can't have open alcohol. You can't, like, be, you know, if you're going to be drinking, you have to be covert about it, especially if there's a cop near you. Standard public St. Patrick's Day in any sort of outdoor space rules. We get there. We're walking up just toward, like, our meeting place for some other friends and noticing people crushing beers, like, openly drinking beers. It's like, huh, but they're, like, kind of behind a gate. We're like, all right, it must be some sort of, like, VIP area where they bought fancy beers. And then we get higher up, and we see a dude just straight up drinking out of a glass liquor bottle 5 feet from a police officer. And at that point, my mind is blown, because you can't do that shit in New Orleans at Mardi Gras. Glass is a fucking no-no. And we realize, like, no, this whole place just does not give a shit. It's lawlessness. So we run in, we grab a bunch of beers, we tell our friends to bring liquor. I think we got a flask of Fireball or something. And that day is just a complete shit show. We watch someone race past the barricade and get hit by the side of a float.
Oh my God.
Which was fucking crazy. We saw someone kick what they thought was an empty cooler. It exploded and sent glass flying all over the place.
Oh my God.
The porta potties had a line so long that people quickly found a dumpster with like concrete bunker around it and turned that into a second porta potty station
into
with
a literal
boys
dumpster
and a girl's side. I want to be clear, this is not just, like, there was an organization, separate lines, someone took a dump back there, and it wasn't on the boys' side. I watched someone get punched out by a Freebirds bathroom, and the employee be incredibly proud of himself for 5 minutes before the cops came. It was just a fucking madhouse.
I like that you paused after you said, I watched. Somebody took a dump back there and it wasn't on the boys' side. I watched.
I wish I had the kind of abandoning spirit. Like, I have to poop in my home with the door locked. Like, a public toilet is an emergency. I can't fathom the kind of confidence a person had to take a shit in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, sometimes you don't have a choice.
In situations like that always fill me with hope for humanity, because we always think, like, oh, you know, one day the bombs will drop, the internet will stop, the electricity will go out, and we'll be doomed. So no, we fucking won't. We'll get drunk. There'll be, like, a sort of working bathroom at some point. It'll be fine. We can take care of ourselves.
Except for Drew, who will be looking for a lock, and there ain't none.
Yeah. I'm going to be very uncomfortable.
As far as that liquor bottle next to the cop goes, that's a strategy. If you stay within 5 feet of
the
cop,
he was a distraction.
It narrows his field of view. As long as you keep behind him,
you have to leave his range of attack in order to provoke the arrest of opportunity.
I thought you meant, all right, we'll send Mickey to go drink a bottle of JD next to the cops so they won't notice me doing the fucking heroin.
I'm gonna take a shit by this dumpster. Can you go drink by that cop?
Go take a glass bottle next to the police. That'll be fine. You'll be fine. He's only gonna grab you if you move 5 feet away from him.
God, the ingenuity.
I'm surprised you came back from that, Drew.
That, honestly, I wasn't really all that drunk. It was so insane. I was like, I don't know. I kind of want to keep a few wits about me.
Boo. You know, I don't have any excessive St. Patrick's Day stories, and I worked nightclubs in Corby on St. Patrick's Day.
Wow.
I think it's generally a calmer day than your average Saturday night. It was we used to get a load of free stuff from Guinness, like huge novelty top hats, borderline racist iconography. That was good, but as opposed to, was it like a wilder, more, I mean, Corby's kind of a Scottish-Irish town, so everybody would say, like, oh yeah, we should go down the Irish Centre, and it'd be, you know, it'd be great crack, and it's like, what? Yeah, but that's kind of every week, so there's nothing distinctive about it. There were some good nights. I wouldn't say there were any particularly wilder or more disastrous than any other night, really. Or, you know, alternatively, they might have been so good, I can't actually remember them. That's a possibility.
Schrodinger's party.
Mm.
Yeah, I've got nothing either. When I was a kid, it was just like, oh, you're not wearing green, I'm going to pinch you. And I'd be thinking, fuck you, I'm not playing this. And then later, like when I was an adult and living in Korea, it'd be just like, fuck you, you're not Irish, you Canadian douche.
I gotta ask a potentially offensive question here to Steve, but what kind of racist iconography?
Just, you know, like great big novelty top hats with buckles on them.
Oh, okay, so are the Irish a race?
Theoretically, yeah.
No, pilgrims are.
I mean, genetically, yes. Culturally, I suppose so.
I mean, you know, they've certainly got a history of racism against them.
Yeah. I don't know. As an Imperial Englishman, I'm going to give them the green card for being a race, I guess. I just let me check my list of people we've oppressed. Yep, they're on there.
I don't know. Legit question. I wasn't trying to be a smartass with that one. I probably have to take, like, you know, I am to St. Patrick's Day what Bob is to Marvel movies. I, for the most part, don't give a shit. I don't like beer. Don't really drink beer. I can't stand corned beef. I don't like cabbage unless it's kimchi. You know, if you're gonna boil potatoes, make fucking mashed potatoes out of them.
That's
you're taking all my boxes, Rick.
Corned beef's not for everyone. Do you have some sort of Italian equivalent of St. Patrick's Day, Rick?
No, I don't particularly care about the Italians either.
I celebrate Rick Day every day, and fuck all you guys.
You know something? My wife is always trying to be like, hey, why don't we get you one of those 24andMe things so we can learn about your history and ancestry? And I'm like, why? I don't particularly care.
I'm exactly the same.
Oh, God, I'm the same way. It's like, man, I'm trying to build the Bevan name from the ground up.
I'm building my own master race.
I am Bevan.
I don't want to get some, like, you know, some report that says I come from, like, you know, a mountainous region just full of village idiots or something, you know?
Honestly, I was the same because I used to see these adverts when this first started coming out in England. There'd be somebody who's like, oh, I used to think I was just Emma from Northampton, but then I found out that I was a Persian queen and a Viking. It's like, no, you were just Emma from Northampton. Fucking get over it. But I can drive for 4 hours and go to a village called Weverall, where apparently...
where you are king!
I've yet to return there and claim my birthright. By May.
Oh, God. I There's a pub in Centralia. There's a chain. I don't know if they're outside of Washington, but there's a chain of pubs and hotels in Washington State called McMenamins. What they do is they generally buy up old buildings, like, you know, like old hotels and old speakeasy type establishments that have kind of become run down, and they restore them into these, you know, really nice pubs. And I don't have a strict story about one, except the general vibe of, because Centralia, Washington, you know, where I spent my teens, is super redneck. Very, you know, every weird stereotype about Western rednecks is Centralia. And watching a bunch of guys in Carhartt jackets vomit outside of an ostensibly Irish pub next to the train tracks. Is kind of my teenage St. Patrick's Day experience.
I mean, it sounds legit, like a proper.
Yeah.
You know what? It's like the St. Patrick's Day. There's some sort of negative connotation about, you know, the Irish being drunk, so you get drunk on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
But really, they are exactly as drunk as everyone else in this area of the hemisphere. The only reason I think we don't take like St. Andrew's Day and St. George's Day as seriously is because the Irish have just got better PR, so we just kind of hop onto their holiday. We're like, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day, so I'm getting drunk on a Thursday. But you were drunk last Thursday. But yeah, but you know, I'm wearing a hat now, so
this week it's okay.
It's fine.
Yeah,
I'm culturally being culturally appropriative. Leave me alone.
Hmm. See, you were saying the Italian equivalent. I want the Australian equivalent. You know, a day where we just go out there, you know, with a big can of Foster's and a knife and skin a koala or something.
They don't even have saint. They've just got Australia Day. They've just got Australia Day, and they just do what they do every other day. Which is exactly what you just said, I assume.
Yeah, come on, Rick. Stab a koala. Skinning it takes work. That's not something you want to do while you're trying to enjoy some nice, delicious
just
Fosters.
Stab it and then kick it around a bit until it falls apart.
Ow.
That's the way to relax on a Sunday. On Australia Day, I assume.
I mean, it sounds brutal, but they are the bears that, you know, drop down onto people and maul them.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's true. Know,
maybe fuck them.
Yeah, it's like, koalas look cute until they're latched onto your face.
Don't fuck them. They've all got chlamydia.
And aren't they, like, super freaking blasted out of their mind due to the eucalyptus they eat? Like all the time, they're completely hammered.
Well, okay, now I feel a kinship.
They get hammered on leaves, drop out of a tree, and maul someone.
If I want to go out and get into a fight with a drugged-up chlamydia bearer, again, I don't need a day for that.
I don't need to go to Australia for that.
I like to think we've sort of discovered a universal truth about all the nations of the world. We can all make terrible decisions. We don't need an excuse, but it's nice to have one.
It's the universal truth. No matter who you are, you can shit in a dumpster if you need to. Unless you're Drew.
Buy a dumpster, Rick. Buy a dumpster.
Didn't quite make it to the dumpster.
There was a whole dumpster there, and you just like, you're 5 feet away, going, no, I'm shitting here. I'm making a statement. St. Patrick's Day comes, but once a year.
I'm sure his only regret, or her, was that there wasn't time to paint it green.
There's always time to paint it green. It depends on what you're drinking, I guess.
Gotta slam a bubblegum snow cone real quick.
Also, I guess it depends on the state of the pavement in the area, because if you drink enough Guinness, you can tarmac a road if you try.
Oh, God.
Oh, Jesus.
And on that note, I think maybe we say Happy St. Patrick's
Day. It's true.
Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And shift on over to the Brandon Sanderson Kickstarter. So for folks who are unfamiliar with this, we're just going to hit it briefly. It's been talked about a lot by this point. Brandon Sanderson, author of multiple series and stuff, wrote several books during his downtime that are not, I guess, owned by any particular publisher. He launched a Kickstarter seemingly as a means to sell them sort of directly to people. And yeah, it went really, really well. As of the recording of this podcast, there are 13 days left, and it is sitting about $100,000+ short of $30 million.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, literally, I've been watching this thing since we started recording, and it is still going up like every few minutes. It just went up now.
There's a reasonable chance it'll hit 30 while we're doing this podcast.
Yeah.
At what point of this monetary inflation does Brandon Sanderson just suddenly turn evil? I assume that's how it works.
So let's get into the logistics of this real quick, because my understanding of this, and someone please feel free to correct me, I am not super savvy on all of this, but my layman's understanding is that this isn't as much a Kickstarter as much as a method for doing a direct sales to everybody while generating the, you know, PR of it and skirting around a publishing or Amazon percentage. Kickstarter obviously is going to take their cut, but I don't think it's anywhere near the 30% that you give over to Amazon if you want to go indie.
Yeah.
I'd agree. This is not like funding a new business. I mean, I'm not criticizing here because there's a lot of haters out there and most of them can go fuck themselves. But no, I mean, this, you're right, Drew. This is pretty much like using Kickstarter, at least to me, it seems like more as a sales channel.
Yeah, and it's also funding the production of the books, like, you know, things like cover art and
right. Yeah. But I mean, it's safe to say that those needs were met a long time ago.
I have $30 million now. We can afford a painter.
I'm guessing the $500 he spent on that probably just fell out of his pocket at some point.
You could put an Andy Warhol on the cover at this point.
So, there's definitely been some criticism of this one. I don't think any of us have any conceptual issues with this. It's a direct sales. It's saying, hey, would you like to buy this book for this amount of money through this platform? And people saying, yes, we would.
Yeah, well, this is what the internet is for. This is your chance to circumvent all the hierarchies built for greedy manipulators to make money out of people's talent. You can go directly to the source. And on that note... You can go and buy my fucking books from Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in all fairness here, I mean, at the lowest tier, anyway, he's selling these books for less than one of the big trad pubs would sell it. I mean, they'd sell it for like $16. You can pick up these books for $10 a piece, which, you know...
Yeah.
Reasonable.
Yeah.
It's not the cheapest out there, but... I would expect a Sanderson ebook to probably still go for like the $17 range under a publisher.
It's the closest we're going to get to, you know, complete fairness. I mean, I'm not saying that any indie can just write a book and go into this and do a crowdfunder and make a lot of money. Obviously not.
In fact, let's even say that most authors can't, including the ones on this podcast. We're not throwing stones that we're not casting at ourselves here.
Yeah, Brandon Sanderson has a staff of like 30 people just to maintain his standing business.
Yeah, and he is a well-known name. He was chosen to take over Wheel of Time. Like, the man has a tremendous following that is facilitating the success of this. And it's hard won through, you know, years and years of good work. Sorry, go ahead, Steve. Just really wanted to hammer down on that point.
Yeah. If I was Brandon Sanderson, I'd have somebody paid to move my mouth up and down right now on this podcast. Why not? It's creating work. It's saving me valuable jaw effort.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, if this was me, you would be talking to a Rick Welty impersonator right now.
A really talented one.
His name, fucking tear.
Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, just sitting in my living room observing me all week. And then doing the podcast better than I would. But this is why I probably shouldn't make stupid amount of money on Kickstarter. I would spend it in ridiculous ways. I really hope that Brandon Sanderson is doing something really fucking stupid with his money.
At least take a small portion. Yeah, and just be like, you know, most of this is going towards production and my crew and stuff, but I took $100,000 to this and I decided to set up an armadillo fighting ring.
I also put a jetpack on this raccoon.
Oh, fuck, I want to see that now.
Well, see, the thing is, this is why capitalism is like, it's so enticing. Because if you've got the money, you can make more money. Because if I could put a jetpack on a raccoon, God, I'd be arrested, but I'd be rolling in those fucking YouTube bucks.
Oh, but here's the thing. If you're rich enough to put a rocket pack on a raccoon, you're kind of already above the law.
You need to pay a patsy to put a rocket pack on a raccoon.
I'll do 5 days in prison, and I'll be the most celebrated human being on the planet.
Just get the little guy up there and make sure to play the Rocketeer theme.
Yeah. Give him a little helmet.
He's going to have a dapper little suit and everything. He's going to have a backstory.
I call him the Raccoonateer.
Raccoonateer.
I'm going to have a talented artist to pen his fucking backstory in a graphic novel, 90 pages, and available on a different Kickstarter. Money makes money. This is how it works.
Yeah. I love all this lore, and it's just a smashed-to-death raccoon in the street.
Yeah, I mean, the raccoon's definitely dead. There's no way this is ending well for the raccoon. For a while, we'll all get caught up in the moment. It'll be great. Yeah.
There will be no sequel to the Raccooneteer.
Like the Rocketeer.
Yeah, exactly. We all fondly remember the Rocketeer. For all I know, that guy died in a rocket accident as well.
Jesus.
Can anyone honestly tell me they know where the actor from the Rocketeer went? No, you can't. See, no one cares.
I can't even tell you who the actor from the Rocketeer is.
And yet a beloved movie.
That's the fear. It's like, if we put up this, like, you know, this Kickstarter for the Raccooneteer as a goof, and then it suddenly starts, like, you know, blowing up, and then it's like, well, now I guess we got to do it.
Oh, no.
Incidentally, the lead from the Rocketeer is Billy Campbell.
And he's still alive? Otherwise, this joke is in terribly bad taste.
Died in a rocket accident.
A jet engine, you still say. Oh, no.
Steve, edit all this out.
He wouldn't stop. He wouldn't stop it with the raccoons.
He couldn't see. I would love that if that was his end story. It's just like, he was in that movie and he could not stop rocketeering, and it was the death of him. That's a way to go.
No, Billy, it's just a prop. It's just a prop.
Fuck you, Nazi.
I thought Joe said he couldn't stop fucking with the raccoons. And I was picturing Billy Campbell getting mauled to death by forest bandits.
That's the way Bevan dies.
I made my Rocketeer money. Now I'm allowed to love whoever I wish.
I'm a movie star. This is my raccoon wife now.
Horrifying mix of syphilis and rabies.
He was the first one to try and put a jetpack on a raccoon. It did not go well.
Oh, well, that's what progress is all about.
It's incidentally also how his relationship with Jennifer Connelly ended.
Syphilis and rabies?
No!
I'd risk it.
Getting upset, getting up. Never mind.
Yeah, let's just go with
pause. Move on.
Just move away from this.
We can head back to the Brandon Sanderson Kickstarter.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about that.
Let's do that.
We are. So, you know, conceptually, good for him, good for everybody who wanted the books. It's a fair price for a product that people clearly want. So, you know, no conceptual problem here. We do, however, feel, kind of circling back on the point we hit earlier, we've talked a good bit about, oh man, this is going to be bad when a glut of people who don't realize how much work and effort and, you know, time Brandon Sanderson has put into his career up to this point before launching the Kickstarter impacted the success of it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of cringe.
Good, bad. I'm indifferent to it. Yeah. Bring on the cringe.
Yeah. It's going to be some entertainment value when people, it's the same with any medium. There's somebody who gets in there at the right time, at the right place with the right clout, makes the most of it. Then there'll be few people who can surf off that wave, and then there'll be a lot of disappointed people.
I mean, kickstarting books was already, you know, was already kind of a thing for some people. It was already a business model for some people, but yeah, nobody has done it to this extent.
Can we talk? Has anyone ever kickstarted a book? I've never messed with that.
I get a feeling it was kind of taboo for a while, like it wasn't the done thing. But it always seemed to me really sensible for anyone with, you know, a solid enough following.
I know that Monte Cook Games basically launched with a Kickstarter. It launched with a Kickstarter to launch the their Numenera game. But again, that's a similar thing. That's Monte Cook, who, you know, was super big in the tabletop role-playing industry. So,
yeah.
And then really also games. That's, I mean, games are started on Kickstarter all the time.
Yeah, but also books.
Also a book.
Well, it was, yeah, there were novels involved, I think. I can't remember, honestly.
Truly, the only crowdfunding I've done is the Shingles movie. He's starting production in May, FYI, everybody.
And comic book.
Yeah.
Chronicles of Calamity comic book. We've done like three of those.
Oh, that's right. I forgot we had used crowdfunding for that because it shifted over to the Patreon at a certain point.
Yeah, we've done all right with, I guess, appeasing our core, loyal, beautiful audience, whom I love. Yeah, they've been great, but I don't know. I think if I had a bigger guaranteed following and I was about to release another book in a series, I might just say, like, I could rely on you guys to buy this after I write it, or I could say, you know, show me the money.
So last year, I was going to do one. I had put this post on my it was just a joke post on my thing about, like, you know, about rewriting Bill the Vampire as kind of like gender swap, but just kind of rewriting it from the ground up as, like, you know, with whole new characters. And it got a lot of, like, you know, got a lot of things. People were like, yeah, you should do it. And I was like, yeah, you're all saying you should do that, but I'm not quite sure. So I was like, well, what if I did a Kickstarter and tried to do it? And then if it got funded, I could, like, you know, do this project. And I was going to do that, but then my basement filled with sewage and, well, it just kind of fell off my radar.
I was going to do it, but then God said no.
It's always wise to remember Snakes on a Plane, a movie that the internet demanded, said they wanted with all their fervor, and then absolutely did not go fucking see.
Exactly. So that was my plan, to put it up there. And if people funded it, hey, I was more than happy to do it. But if they didn't, then it was like, yeah, I see how this is going. Yeah.
The current zeitgeist of what's funny on the internet is thin and shallow and often stupid. But money is never any of those things.
So I guess I have a conceptual business question from this one. I don't know, Rick, maybe you had looked into this when you were considering doing one. What's the limitation on running a Kickstarter for a new release, you know, and saying this is going to be your chance to get it 3 months ahead of the mass market audience, and then throwing it wide on, or not wide, even just putting it on Amazon or whatever, say 3 months post that. Is that a game plan? Because I assume it's not going to live on Kickstarter forever. It eventually has to move to the broader audiences.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have, like, you know what, like 30 days to do your Kickstarter. And then I think they give you so much time to fulfill it before people can start complaining about you. But I mean, yeah, that probably would have been kind of the thing. Be like, hey, you know, you're getting this ahead of everybody else. You're kind of pre-funding it. Part of it was going to be, you're making this happen. So you're making it happen, and as a result, you are getting something for it. Although I probably would have put in a, hey, throw me a dollar just because you love me tier.
It's kind of similar of what we did with the comic book. I mean, that was, you were definitely making it happen earlier. You were getting in on the ground floor. You're also getting a lot of cool bonus shit with that. Yeah. Eventually, it will be for sale on the general internet, but probably not for a little while. So everybody who's cool already has a comic book.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like I was going to charge people a ridiculous amount for it. It'd be like, okay, you know, you give me $5, you get the ebook.
A few slender $1,000. Yeah. Part with that, and the magic is yours.
I mean, I think with these, you got to put a couple of, like, crazy ones out there. It's like, you know, hey, and if you pledge like $500, you get to have lunch over Zoom with me or something.
It'd be really great if someone like Stephen King just went, like, yeah, I wrote a book, and if I don't get $1 million, I'm just going to set fire to it. No one will ever see it.
In the Eighth Dark Tower, titled The Good Ending. Oh, fuck!
Oh, man, what have you said? It's like, actually, guys, I wrote good endings to all my books, and you can rate them. If I raise $1 billion,
is that really that too different than what Wu-Tang Clan did?
No.
And then, like, Martin Shkreli bought their things and just hid it away because he's a douche.
Well, he lost that in the.
Well, yeah, but before he lost that for being a douche.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the Wu-Tang Clan didn't plan that to work out that way. I'm also sure that they were too busy counting money to care, but, you know, it all worked out in the end.
That'd be an interesting thing, to kind of like, almost like a Kickstarter, like ghostwriting thing, but like, I'm going to write this novel, and, you know, the winning bid, you get it all. You get, like, if I get so much money, you get, like, you know, the copyright and all.
It wasn't used for a Kickstarter or anything, but wasn't there that thing a few years back where Margaret Atwood wrote a novel and they planted a bunch of trees, and like in 100 years those trees will be used to print the novel for the first time?
That just sounds obtuse.
It was bizarre, but I remember that.
That sounds really cool, and also has a lot of faith in long-term human logistics.
Yeah, it really does.
I'd like to say unequivocally to everyone listening to this podcast, I too have written a novel that I will release in 100 years. It's really good.
tell their kids to pick it up.
Yeah.
See, you know what would have been hilarious with this? And I trust he didn't do this, but like, you know, he was like, hey, I wrote 4 secret novels, like, you know, throughout COVID. It'd be great if he didn't write shit, and now he's like sitting there going, well, I guess I have to write these now.
You know, for $30 million, I could find
100%. But then if he hadn't made the pledge, then it would be like, well, I guess I don't do shit.
I guess that's not a bad idea to launch my next series. All right, assholes, it's $1 million.
You want Superpowers 5? I want
Superpowers the college years. $10 million minimum.
I wonder if I'd been a bit more active and a bit more illegal, maybe I could have done a business model of crowdfunding for unsolicited biographies of people. Just people I've followed around. I know all their horrible secrets. And, you know, I could just crowdfund on that.
That sounds a lot like blackmail.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's just stalking.
Yeah, but it's indie blackmail.
I'm crowdfunding from one source to not publish the secrets I've learned.
This is grassroots celebrity blackmail.
Yeah, it's crowd-mailing.
Oh, all right, celebrity. All right, I thought you were talking about, like...
Just you?
Tim down the street.
Yeah, I've already thought that. Just
like the guy who works at the dog grooming salon, and Steve like tips behind him.
Even there, wouldn't you be a little bit intrigued?
A little, yeah.
Not enough to put up cash.
This man looks up from his dog grooming, and there's just Steve standing in the window with his hands pressed to the glass.
Taking notes.
And if you listen to this, Tim the dog groomer, you can outbid the general public. Should you wish your terrible secrets to remain secrets? It's not blackmail if it's art.
You see, I painted his dirty secrets onto the canvas, and I'm offering to sell him the piece.
Now I want to see sold at a high art gallery just a painting called Tim's Dirty Secrets.
Somewhere out there, I'm sure you can find it.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd want to Google that.
maybe let that one live in the internet infamy. Yeah.
But speaking of internet infamy, I mean, as with anything that does well, there's been a lot of people, whether jealousy, stupidity, or combination of both, that have just been going out of their way to, like, you know, to take a shit on this for all sorts of with all sorts of ridiculous logic.
Yeah,
I think my personal favorite, I think, is the people who are like, well, this is unfair to his trad publishers. He's betraying them.
Nice fucking nod.
Yeah. Hey, if they ain't got a contract for it, they can eat shit, because they would fuck him for $1 in an instant.
Oh, yeah.
He's taking blood from the vampires.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, someone being like, oh, what? He's hurting Walmart.
No, not Walmart.
Won't someone think of the billionaires?
Not the Waltons.
I mean, I will say, traditional publishing is definitely not where it was in its highest day. And to sort of kind of come at the other end of it, I've seen a few people like celebrating like this is the beginning of the end of traditional publishing, which it's probably not. It's a slight tweak on their nose that, you know, he's so successful and he stepped away and he proved a shitload more successful. But really, this just means that he's going to have ungodly leverage next time he wants to go into a traditional publishing contract. The lore of traditional publishing is, at this point, kind of the prestige and the reputation of their yesteryears, but they do still have things that indie straight up doesn't.
Yeah. At the end of the day, if you've got a corporation in your corner batting for you, excellent, well done. It'll probably work out a lot better than not. On the other hand, if you have enough fans that you can just sell it to them directly and then build a castle made of gold, then good on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brandon Sanderson has proven he doesn't need a traditional publisher, but I don't think any of us are remotely shocked by that. It's not like, you know, he came out. If I launched a $30 million Kickstarter, that would be a goddamn surprise.
Yeah, once you hit a certain point of fame, you know, like a certain point of clout like that, then the publisher needs you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is because you guys were talking about it so much on the chat, and I don't think you would have been talking about it as much if it wouldn't have been for all these haters and folks. And that's, I gotta wonder how much of that contributed to the success.
It definitely drove some extra money that way. I don't know if I'm sure that the success would have happened without it, but there's almost.
Oh yeah, the success certainly, but
yeah,
how much more?
Yeah,
that's the dream for me. Yeah. I want an empire built on the blood of my enemies.
Now we're talking. Now we know why the shingles thing is. You're so, you know, hard up against that. You just, if I create enough controversy, eventually I will become powerful.
That started long before shingles, Steve.
I can't fault your logic. There's a word for it, marketing by deliberately stirring up controversy. See, I still don't think that... All right, allow me just to crash this back into my own paranoid fantasies. You've heard it all before, but Ghostbusters 2016. There's no way anybody thought that was a good movie. And then they were like, yeah, but we put some women in it, and if you don't like it, maybe it's because you're a misogynist. Cue fucking months and months of internet fighting, which probably did more to market that movie than all the Papa Johns in the universe.
I do imagine Bob sitting there, like, you know, like, you know, looking at the news about, like, you know, some YA writer getting, like, raked over the coals and being like, my shit's a lot more offensive than that.
Every day of my life.
I mean, he's got a point. I've read some of Bevan's work, and it is very offensive. There's no justice in the world, it's true.
I'll get there.
If there were any justice in the world, there'd be an angry mob outside Bevan's house right now.
Hey, come on, folks. Start burning our books here. Cause us some controversy.
So, Rick, what were some of the other criticisms being levied against the whole Kickstarter thing?
Of course, you have the people coming in, like, you know, in a fantasy forum. They know who the fuck Brandon Sanderson is. They're like, oh, Brandon who? I've never heard of this person. Go the fuck away. Yeah.
I'll admit, I'd never heard of him, but then again, I'm not a very observant person, and he's very rich, so
yeah.
I'm not going to trumpet my ignorance, because clearly one of us is the winner here.
One of the stupider arguments I saw was somebody saying, you know, I don't support this because he doesn't need the money.
I mean, that's nice, I guess. That's kind of beside the fucking point.
Yeah.
Do you want the product or not? So I've never just looked at something I actually wanted and needed and thought, you know what, they don't need the fucking money, and walked away and just not had the product that I wanted and needed.
Yeah. It's not like he's hitting you up for like $10 just because of the fun time you guys had.
Just sitting there 3 years ago. In my corner looking at a pile of Charmin going, you know what, I'm just going to shit on the floor. They don't need the fucking money.
Yeah, it's like, Brandon Sanders not hanging out outside of a bar at like 4 a.m. begging you for $10 spare change so we can throw a book at you.
And if he's doing that, he does need the money. So,
my God, his career's gone so downhill that he's shitting next to a dumpster.
Fuck those bears. I ain't spending this money.
Well, we'll see. Here's the thing now. With this kind of money, he can purposely shit next to any dumpster he wants.
He can wipe with an actual bear.
He could shit in the dumpster.
Holy
shit. What the hell, Bob?
Like a king. Like a golden god.
I only wipe with chlamydia ridden koalas.
Wow.
Bring me the softest bear cub you can find.
You know what? Everybody says, like, well, you get to a certain level of wealth and you kind of expect immorality. But you know what? I think writing some books that everyone likes is probably the most moral way to make a lot of money. And if he's done that, my only grievance is that he might not be spending the money entertainingly enough.
Yeah, like, you know, if
he should be wiping his ass with endangered species.
Exactly.
I don't know what the fuck you're doing with your mic there, Bob.
It sounds like you're talking into one of the old robot voice changers.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Sounds like we've got a cool robot sidekick. Yeah.
And that's my thing on Salty Bastards. Check it out, everybody.
Yeah, but you know something. I mean, if after this Kickstarter, like, you know, ends, if we read that, like, you know, all 30 of his employees like died mysterious deaths, then I might throw some shade. You know,
died mysterious rocket pack related deaths.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, you're right. You're right, Steve. I mean, the guy's just, he's selling books. He's entertaining people. He's got his own company. He's got his own employees. I'm not really seeing any downsides here.
Making
money.
Yeah,
it better be a good Christmas bonus at the company this year. Yeah. Else he's going to be catching some side eye. Yeah.
We decided not to do raises this year, but we do have a Christmas party, including this raccoon with a rocket pack.
Just sitting there on his podium at the end of the fundraiser, addressing his employees and go, thanks for all your hard work. And then just rocket pack away.
Drops a sign behind him. No raises this year. We're financially struggling. No, thank you for your understanding.
No bonus for you. Developed rocket pack. Goodbye. See you on Mars, losers. So yeah, providing he doesn't do that, I see no issue with this. I don't think it's going to damage trad publishing at all. They'll adapt.
No.
I don't think it's unfair to other indies. They'll adapt. They always do.
Yeah, so I was in some forum and somebody was talking about maybe this hurting trad publishing, and I was like, you know, maybe if the trad pubs stopped like picking whoever is like the reality TV star of the year and giving them $5 million advances for books that won't sell, maybe they might do better.
Stop giving children's books to celebrities, you absolute frauds.
Except Mick Foley.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a secret, I guess, among us or among most authors. You do publishing for prestige. You do traditional publishing for prestige and to like be in bookstores, and you do indie to make money because the difference is enormous. Amazon, we're talking about skirting Amazon's 30%, but. Credit where it's due, and God, there's so much bad about Amazon. I know. But the rate they pay on ebooks compared to traditional publishing blows it out of the fucking water.
Oh, yeah.
It's generally like 40 to 50% more money or more of the royalties coming to you.
I think it's a lot more than that.
I was just being.
Yeah.
Because it's what? It's 70%. Yeah. Amazon's is public. You get 70. Yeah. So. If you have, you know, anywhere between, I guess, what, 10 to 30 might be a reasonable range to guess.
My theory would be the same as if you treat writing like any other job, where you can go to a 9-to-5 and you can have the protection of your employer. Sorry, Americans. You can have most people outside of America can have the protection of their employer. You can have your guaranteed income, your benefits and all that stuff, and somebody in your corner. That's great. Or you can go out and start your own business, and if it takes off, you make a fuckload more money. But that's your life. And I would assume, in a perfect world, indie and trad publishing would be like that. It's like you can go indie, and it's going to be your 12-hour-a-day job if you want to see anything out of it. Or you can go trad, and they'll take care of you. But I don't think trad are really taking care of people as well as they should be, so...
Oh no!
Nope. If this rattles the cage a bit, fair enough.
Yeah, this is an industry where the person who creates the stuff somehow winds up making the least,
absolutely.
In the food chain there.
If you're not well agented, going with a big five, and probably coming to the table with a proven track record of success, there's a strong chance you're not going to get the push that you're picturing when you think of traditional pub, because the people who get those pushes check all of those boxes and usually a few more. Mm-hmm. You, as just a regular person, will probably be doing all the work of an indie author in terms of you'll be handling all your promoting. They will do your cover and your editing and all that shit. If they're not, holy shit, bail out now.
Oh, yeah.
But right. In terms of like marketing and all that stuff, you're probably going to be mostly doing your own thing.
Yeah, I love hearing that. Like, you know, I'm in a couple of writers groups, and it's like, well, I'm not gonna self pub. I'm gonna query because I don't want to do marketing myself. And it's, oh, you sweet summer child.
Oh no, yeah. You know how you avoid that? Write 10 bestsellers.
Yeah,
yeah. There may have been an era where it's kind of like you get your publishing contract, you put your feet up. While writing, of course, but that era is long gone. And I think it's the same with a lot of entertainment now, that if you're already killing it on YouTube, why would you give a fuck about a television career?
Unless there's a huge advance involved.
Yeah, unless there's a huge advance in support. But again, if you're, you know, if you're making a lot of views on YouTube and it's giving you a good steady income, why would you go and start at the bottom in a media company?
Well, unless that's what your long-term goal is. Like, I don't want to run traditional entirely down the road. A lot of folks want that long-term goal of, like, seeing their books in bookstores, working their way up to getting those kinds of pushes. And I don't want to say it's you know, a bad goal necessarily, because that is definitely something that people chase, and some clearly do get it. We have people who rise to the top of traditional publishing, but... Mm-hmm. It's a very, very long-term investment to get to that kind of state. And it's, I think more people would be better served just understanding the time frame they're looking at to reach those goals isn't getting in the door. Yeah. That's only the first step along a very, very long journey.
Yeah. And when you're a Brandon Sanderson, you can walk in the door and, like, you know, if you don't like that contract, you can do something about it.
Mm.
It's also worth noting that a lot of, like, the people who are big names today did not start in today's industry. They started at a point where they started at a time
when everyone was on cocaine.
I'm just like, they started at a time when big publishers were still curating their mid-list. You know, when they were still supporting.
That's very, very fair.
A lot of these people wouldn't be big if publishing hadn't been doing those things in those days, and they're not doing it anymore.
That's fair.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
But I would say, like, my point is, and this is an optimistic point, I am more optimistic than I let on. With success stories like this, and something like the corporate failure of crack.com and the rise of 1-900-HOT-DOG, which is just all talent and subscriber-based, these things keep on making enough noise. The people trying to make money out of publishing, the publishers, are going to have to take notice and maybe, you know, step up their game a little bit. That's my optimistic take on it.
Yeah, I mean, much like, you know, this job market has kind of shifted in favor of the employees versus the employers, it would be nice to see that kind of shift where...
Absolutely.
You don't have to, like, where you don't have to worry that somebody's going to hand you a contract, and if you don't read that tiny little fine print, that's like basically saying, "Oh, you owe us your soul."
I mean, to be honest, I think we all kind of know what's going to kill traditional publishing. It's just not a very pretty thing to talk about.
Very porn.
it's the eventual death of the physical bookstore. When those die, and unfortunately the way things have been going, it kind of looks like that will eventually happen one day. I'm not happy about it. I love bookstores. I grew up in them. But you know, when bookstores, I guess, become less prominent, even, we don't have to say they fully go belly up, but when they lose their commonness, when they lose that luster of having your book on a physical shelf that's easily accessible and that, you know, people are going to see, that is the big feather that might actually topple some dominoes.
Yeah, because these are big companies that they're steeped in, like, they don't like to change.
Yeah, and that's their big draw right now, and that's a draw that really only they can offer, is getting in those places and on those shelves, and for a great deal of writers, that is success, and I understand, because that's what we grew up seeing as success, so, you know, it's an entirely valid viewpoint to have, but if those are gone, then all of a sudden, the biggest sort of selling point that we've all held on to for that is pushed away, and unless you're one of the top talents, it's a lot harder to justify the investment of your royalty percentage.
Top talent or obnoxious celebrity, which is also sort of contributing to the death of bookstores vibes.
Yeah, I never understand. Like, I understand, you know, some things, but it's like, okay, this person's a reality star with their 10 minutes of fame. Why are you giving them $5 million for a book that you know they're not writing?
Because they think it can earn six.
Yeah.
Yeah, the problem is, though, it usually doesn't.
Yeah, I guess the idea of the rock star writer perhaps just doesn't live in traditional publishing anymore. Well, almost definitely the next rock star writer is just coming up through the internet.
I mean, right now, I think the Rockstar writer has $30 million on Kickstarter.
Yeah. I'll talk about the future now. That, you know, we're going to be reading the book. It's just going to be painted on someone's ass on TikTok. That's the future of literature.
Another thing that I think will damage, I mean, it's sort of already started to happen, but when the most prestigious awards in genre start to be really open to indies as well as people from big publishing. Because awards are another thing that motivate people to choose that path. And I think that at the rate things are going, at least those awards becoming open to a broader array of people is going to happen. Otherwise those awards are going to die. It's gonna change the dynamic a bit, at least for some people. Maybe not.
I think that's another, I said I was an optimist earlier, but allow me to be pessimistic and gloomy for a little while. The idea that physical bookstores, you know, and the rock star writer might fade away, and the awards might fade away, simply because there's so much content based on so many ideas of what the successful content looks like, it'll be diluted and diluted and diluted until we're in this situation, and we're kind of already there now, where anyone can make a movie, anyone can write a book, anyone can make a video game. But then again, anyone can do it, which means you're competing against so much more than what people had to compete against in the old gatekept world of physical media.
Let's be realistic. Within 2 years, Authors and Dragons is basically going to be all of us naked on OnlyFans reading our books.
It already kind of is.
Apparently Steve has a side hustle the rest of us do not know about.
Going back to what Joe was saying,
Robot Bevan is furious.
Yeah, Robot Bevan's about to vaporize us here.
Or horny.
Oh shit, is it?
Yes.
Yes, this is still happening.
I'm going to stop talking. Never mind.
This is what we give people, you know, that the mainstream can't give them. Bevan malfunctioning in real time.
All right, guys, I think we're going to have to reformat him and get a new Bevan bot.
Just hold his navel down for 5 seconds. It's fine.
Make sure that his biological parts use the better parts of Rick's DNA.
Now, these clones only have, like, you know, a certain shelf life, don't they?
Okay, so I guess my last question for the Kickstarter thing is, we've talked a lot about the cons, we've talked about a lot about the eventual flood of authors, but, you know, seeing that this is clearly a viable method for selling to people who are interested in the product directly, have any of y'all entertained the idea of doing a Kickstarter for a book going forward after this?
I don't think I'm big enough. Like, I don't think I have enough of a fan base myself to do it on my own. I think if I get, you know, when I've built more of a platform, and I have more of a fan base, then that could potentially be viable. But at this point, no.
Yeah, I definitely don't have enough of a backing to, I guess, put a concept out there. I don't know. I think if I got a really brilliant concept and I knew I could write 100,000 words start to finish and I was just burning to do it, I might just put it out there just for fun. But, you know, there's a lot that can go wrong with writing a book. It can take a very long time, particularly if you're me and you've got a day job. So, yeah, maybe not for me. Unless I think of something that's, like, super amusing. Like,
yeah, it's not
the biography of Tim the pet groomer. The unauthorized biography, I should add.
Yeah, I have a similar problem with my writing time because I'm primary caregiver for two young children, so my writing time is limited, and I'm already not fast to begin with.
It's something I would like to try at some point. Well, with obviously a modest goal, a bit less than a million. Like I know this one I was looking at last year. I was thinking about maybe putting it up there and saying, okay, the goal is 2,000 or so. You give me that, you've pretty much paid for my time to like to do this.
Yeah.
But I mean, I also expect that whatever I do to like, you know, completely fail, because the Kickstarter is Kickstarter at this point, it's like, you know, there's a secret sauce to it. And you got to spend a decent amount of time on there studying it to get that secret sauce. And time-wise, it's like I'm either going to commit or I'm not going to commit. And that's kind of like, you know, sometimes winds up being the thing. I don't see myself spending like, you know, weeks upon weeks, using my nights, you know, studying Kickstarter.
Yeah. Running a crowdfunder was, quite intensive, but a comic books, it's been quite intensive. And that was with most of the art already being funded by our Patreon. We still had to do the prizes. We still had to do the fulfillment. Funding the movie was kind of like, even then we had to think about what we could give people to get them involved, and you know, time frames for delivery. It was stressful and, you know, a job in itself, but you know, we got comic books and a freaking movie out of it. Hooray.
Yeah, I don't know that I would ever feel comfortable doing a Kickstarter unless I had already written the book. Because, as you said, like, things can just go wrong. I've had to scrap books and, like, go back and restart before. So unless I had a finished manuscript, I could never see myself doing a Kickstarter. I would more likely do a new tier on my Patreon and kick it off as a web serial and just run it as that for a few months or however long it took to write. I don't know, and then maybe kickstart the print version. But for the most part, I like to be writing more than I like to be doing the other parts of this job. And so doing the Kickstarter would add so much to my plate that I just don't think it would really be worth it.
It is weird. It's kind of like you are holding a great idea hostage. It's like if Joe said, you know what, I don't have the time, but if I reach a certain amount, I'll write a Bjorg origin story for A&D. It'd be like, all you're really doing is holding a great idea that everyone knows will be a good product, and you're just kind of holding it hostage with a little knife to its throat. And I think that's pretty cool.
Think of the flip side. If you write that book in advance, you put it on the Kickstarter, and it fails miserably, which pretty much has just told you that nobody wants your shit.
I can see myself doing this. I would take a... I wouldn't ask for $1 billion. I'd start small, like, you know,
not right away.
See what I can get away with for
a couple of mil.
I'll write something small for $200. See how many people I could draw in, and if it was successful, I'd ramp it up from there, taking the stages.
Still waiting for the Robert Bevan artwork coffee table book.
Well, there you go. That might be a future Kickstarter.
Elegant Robert Bevan erotica art coffee table book.
I am once again reminded of, I know this was not meant literally, but I'm like, Steve's passive aggressiving at me about not having written a Bjorg book. Fuck.
Nice.
I wasn't passive aggressive.
No.
I was just saying you could hold a knife at these fuckers, Joe.
It's fine.
If you wanted to. You're a good man that you don't. I wouldn't be so restrained.
I would like to actually add that a dimension of this that I think is not being talked about, and I feel like makes a degree of the criticism of it a little unfair, is that doing a Kickstarter is not like other methods, is very different from a lot of other methods of indie working, in that you really have to put yourself out there in a way that is can be deeply uncomfortable. Because it's not like you're creating this product and being like, I've created this product, now I'm going to put it up for sale and see who buys it. You're going like, hey, everyone, do you want this?
And it's pretty hard, that's, yeah.
It requires even, like, I feel like even if you're famous, you know, you're famous for having publishers acquire your books and then market them for you. You've never had to go directly to people and be like, do you want what it's very, I feel like that takes a level of guts, even if you've already made it, that some people are just disregarding. So I don't know that I would have those guts, you know. That's hard.
I've got something.
I disagree. I think you would, Joe, because, well, I mean, ultimately, we're not doing this, but this is just another thing out there, like putting ourselves on Twitter, putting ourselves.
That's true. That's actually fair.
This is just a different dimension, all of us here do that. So I don't.
That's true.
I think it would come down to not wanting to do it versus not being able to do it.
Oh no! I didn't mean so much not able to do it. I meant that I meant that doing the asking requires a degree of confidence.
Carnival Barker is another job.
Yeah,
and it's a hard job, and it takes a certain kind of skill set to do it properly and do it well. I'm not very good at it at all. It's quite painful for me to kind of reach past a certain social threshold I have. But yeah, I think a big part of promoting anything is you got to be able to. Yeah. Tap your cane on the stage and do a little dance, but it's definitely a skill.
Like this wouldn't bother me because it's recording one video or so, and it's putting a couple of videos and putting it out there. I have a much harder time, say, people are like, well, why don't you go to local bookstores and talk to them and stuff? We're like, I don't want to talk to people. I would so much rather put a video of myself begging for money than going like essentially door to door.
But that's a job, and there are people who that is their skill set, and they do very well out of it. I guess a lot of indie artists are expected to embody the skill sets of many little jobs in order to, you know, and again, that's what the dream would be of being a traditional publisher. It's like, okay, I'll write the words, you do the carnival barking, but that's not really a reality for the vast majority of writers.
Yeah.
Oh, and just in case anybody's wondering, in the time we started talking about this, this has gone up probably about $20,000.
Oh, Jesus.
I think like a more solid, foolproof way of me making money of an author is just to go and hang around outside Brandon Sanderson's house and just ask him for money.
I think that's Steve hinting at the unauthorized biography of Brandon Sanderson coming next year.
I know what you did, Brandon Sanderson.
I watched you kill Tim the dog groomer.
Not with just
a rock,
kill.
With a raccoon and a jetpack. You launched him through the window.
You said it was an accident, but I saw you aim.
And then you had the audacity to go outside and shit next to a dumpster.
I think with a wig and a pair of glasses, I might be able to pass for Brandon Sanderson and hang outside his house and sell some books.
Oh my God.
All right, so if you see Steve blackmailing Bob in a wig this summer, pull up and buy some books.
Just hang outside his house and go, yeah, here are those four secret books. Critical Failures 1, Critical Failures 2.
Surprise, motherfuckers.
All right, everybody. I think that's going to do it for PsyQuest this week. Thank you all for joining us. We'll be back next week with a regular episode of Authors and Dragons. Till then, bye.
Goodbye. Bye.